And this goes back to some of our shows about left brain, right brain, and how the brain functions. It's not that we say the right side of the brain does this and the left side of the brain does that. For instance, the left side of the brain physiologically and emotionally, and I guess if you want to divide out a couple more things, psychologically and cognitively, it is always the gas pedal. It is what makes us do things. It is the motivator. It is the one that goes and does things. It's really good at doing things over and over again. It's the right side of the brain that puts the brakes on things. All right, everyone. Welcome back to the Dr. Alex Show. And today, we're going to talk about anxiety. I think that that is a void that has not been filled with the show. And anxiety has gone through the roof. At least we see it at HML way more since COVID. I know a lot of people blame a lot of things on COVID, but for obvious reasons, it's gone up. And I guess just going right into it, one of the big things is when we had to socially isolate ourselves and then get back out into public, we were not around as many people, did not have to interact as much, didn't have to put up with as many people's things and stuff and all of the fun things it is to be human. And that's one trigger. And the other trigger can be just the anxiety of the world as it is now. A lot of people are claiming it's different and there's a lot of tension going on. And then in general, it was scary. And that's what anxiety is. It is fear of the unknown. It is fear of not knowing what's going to happen. And what I want to go over today is, of course, neurologically, what is going on with anxiety? Because neurology drives psychology. And neurology drives everything we do. I'm in the middle of taking the annual conference right now. And the cool thing about what was just proposed by one of my mentors, Dr. Brandon Brock. It was not proposed, but it was discussed again, is even how the brain will somewhat control, basically the immune system. There isn't a thing that we do that does not involve the brain. And when it comes to anxiety, it is definitely no different. So what I want to do is break down a couple concepts, give some things that anyone can try at home. And this will also be really good for new patients at HML, maybe new patients going to another functional neurology-based clinic, and parents of our patients, because it comes in waves. Clinically, what's really interesting is we'll have waves of kids coming in that are on the spectrum. They're all autistic. The vast majority of our load of kids around August of this last year was autism. Now we're going into what I call tough teens. We have some very tough teens, very obstinate, and the world around them is the problem. They're not the problem, if you will. That could be a whole nother show. And then there's been a whole wave of people in their health breaking down with stress. There's no other way to put it, but the best worst answer is if you're stressed out and you are living your life and then all of a sudden you start breaking down with health issues, it's because your capacity, let's say, is here. Your capacity to handle stress is so much and your life needs way more. Then what'll happen is your capacity will go down with time and your health will continue to decline. And yet your stresses, if they don't stay the same, they only get worse. They only get compounded. So that's the current theme. And maybe in the next couple of weeks around Thanksgiving, Christmas, or the new year, the theme could be learning disorders. Not sure what it's going to be. But I want to talk about anxiety because we had a wave of kiddos and adults come in with anxiety. And putting it simply, when it comes to anxiety, it's going to be living in the brain as the same areas as OCD will live, quote. And it's going to be around the same areas as emotions. And for the most part, anxiety is, at least from what I find, anxiety is coming after something else. So if someone is anxious, it means that there is definitely something else driving it. And that could be environmental triggers, or there can be something else neurologically that is not quite right that is giving rise to the anxiety. So what I like to do is break it down first biochemically. And biochemically, one thing to pay attention to is if someone is anxious, and let's say they go to the doc, they say, I'm anxious, I can't get out of the house, I can't do this, I can't do that, I'm afraid of this happening, whatever it might be, they might get put on a benzodiazepine or an anti-anxiolytic. That's a medication that acts on GABA. That is the, quote, calming neurotransmitter in the brain. And GABA, gamma aminobutyric acid, that's a fun word, will stay in the system longer. So if we have neuron A, my fist, for those watching the show, and neuron B, my other fist, for those watching the show, and neuron A needs to talk to neuron B, they don't really touch. It's what's called the synaptic cleft. So since they don't touch, but they have to communicate, they're going to use chemicals that will get passed from neuron A to neuron B. That chemical can be minerals, it can be proteins, it can be hormones, it can be neurotransmitters. And with that, GABA, being a neurotransmitter, will get passed from neuron A to neuron B. And then after it gets used, it might get used again or it might get absorbed. But what anti-anxiolytics do is it helps keep that GABA in that synaptic cleft in the space between them so that it can get used again and again and again, and then maybe again and then maybe again. And those are very good medications for what they're designed to do, which is put a Band-Aid on the patient, getting them to function at a higher level, let it kick in into their system. It might take up to a couple of weeks. And then it gives that person the ability to live their life. But what has to be done is you have to get down to what is driving that anxiety. So the problem is people will be given the drug. They're told to go find a therapist, go find someone to talk to, go find this health professional or that health professional, or get this taken care of, or this is a very unnecessary stress in your life. Get it out of your life. And a lot of times those things just don't happen. And it may not happen because the prescriber didn't maybe do their job, or the patient didn't do their job, or a mix of both. It's always different from patient to patient. So the issue is people stay on them for quite some time, if not the rest of their life. Is it the worst thing in the world? Well, depends on who you talk to. The thing is I think life is meant to be lived without necessarily any medication support, especially when it comes to any sort of anxiolytics, not necessarily psychotropics, because those are for very serious situations, or antidepressant drugs. If we can't get through life without medicating or self-medicating, it's not judging, because full disclosure, you're talking to someone that had to give things up in life too. The thing is if we're living life and we have to be medicated, then something's wrong. And it really means that we're not happy. And we have to find our happiness, if you will. So anyway, back to GABA. GABA is that anti-anxiety neurotransmitter. And there's a video of me floating around talking about GABA in the past. GABA is a big, big neurotransmitter. And it should not stay, or it should not be able to cross the blood-brain barrier. So it should not be able to go from, let's say you supplement GABA, because you can supplement GABA. It shouldn't be able to be absorbed and get utilized in the brain. But there are people that'll take GABA and they will feel great. So the thought process for myself, and this is something that I learned from academic mentors of mine, is that if GABA is too big and if someone feels better or if they feel worse after that, it means it got in their system and across the blood-brain barrier. And it means the blood-brain barrier is permeable and it's letting things into the system that shouldn't be there. So then you have a whole different problem. Well, more research has come out, and welcome to healthcare, because it's always changing. Some research has come out about how the blood-brain barrier's permeability changes. It changes day to day. It changes with stress. It changes with hits to the head. It changes with bad food. It changes with infections. It changes with trauma, even emotional trauma. It doesn't matter the trauma, whether it's emotional, physical trauma, like a hit to the head, or biochemical trauma, you're overdosing on something awful. Trauma is trauma is trauma, and it's actually, in the end, all processed in the same areas of the brain, and it's going to have the same mechanism in terms of it's going to open up that blood-brain barrier because we want to let things into the brain to help combat inflammation and fight infections and do things. We want to flood it and get it taken care of, and then it's going to close out, and then that might create problems. But anyway, with this GABA, if in the past you were to get better or worse from it, because I would give patients a trial of GABA, and if they got better or worse, I'd be like, oh, permeable blood-brain barrier, we got to work on that. And that's not necessarily the correct way anymore. It may not be the incorrect way. It is hard to say. What I am getting at is, if you want to try supplementing GABA, because maybe you're anxious, you have panic attacks, you're terrified, maybe we're dealing with very debilitating anxiety where you're just so so dysfunctional that you can't get out of bed, or you know someone who can't get out of bed, and drugs aren't working, and this isn't working, maybe some good old-fashioned GABA to assist it could go a long way. And if someone gets better with it, we're using it, and we're using it heavily at HML. And is it a band-aid? Yes. Does it help us take a breather so we can figure out some things further? Yes. Are patients on it for anywhere from a month to, it's been about 6 months? Yeah. And can it be used as a band-aid? Sure. But we do have to be careful, because our brain produces it. Primarily, it's produced in our cerebellum, which is the great coordinator of the brain. And we want our ability to produce GABA to stay up. Because if it doesn't, then we have to rely on taking it. And is that any better than taking a benzodiazepine? Well, yes, because, in my opinion, because a benzodiazepine is a drug, and those drugs quite literally change your personality down to the core, at what's occurring at the cellular level, how your brain interacts with these structures within itself. Your personality is changing on those medications. The GABA is not doing that. But if you don't use it, that whole lose it situation pops up, and we might have issues producing it in the future. I'm not too sure. But when it comes to supplementing GABA, that is something you could try. Do your homework, get it figured out, see if it's right for you. If you're a patient at HML and it hasn't been recommended to you, it's probably because maybe your anxiety-based situation is not so much biochemically driven by a GABA imbalance. Maybe there's something going on with serotonin. And with serotonin, this kind of brings up the two neuroscience clinical sides of anxiety that we see. And with a GABA-based anxiety, what we're going to find is someone with all the typical anxiety symptoms, and we don't need to go into that. But then with someone with a serotonin-based problem, which is the great mood neurotransmitter, this is someone that can have depression on top of it, on top of anxiety. They can have also anger issues on top of anxiety. They can still have the panic attacks, and they can still have the inner trembling, and they can still feel awful, but they'll have further mood disorders because of that. And maybe if it, again, GABA has not been presented to you as an option, or GABA precursors, which I'll go into in a sec, then maybe it's more of a serotonin thing. So serotonin, it's this kind of the same story. Serotonin is all over the brain. I kind of call it the great modulator of the brain anyway, because it's used all over the place. And it is, when it's in check, our moods are pretty good. And with serotonin and GABA, you can take what's called precursors. So with serotonin, we can't just supplement serotonin, at least not Not right now. GABA is pretty easy. It's a pretty easy amino acid to make in a lab. Serotonin is not so much, if at all possible. So with serotonin, we have to take what are called precursors, which means we got to take the nutrients that are needed to help make serotonin. So one of the popular ones is 5-HTP. This is one of the substances used to make serotonin, but we could also use some B vitamins. We can also use some magnesium. We can use some SAMe. We can use St. John's wort, which is a herb that can be used as well. And if we take these nutrients, some Bs, some magnesium, some St. John's wort, some 5-HTP, some SAMe, take it down the capsule or the liquid and give it 20 to 60 minutes, then your body will start producing more serotonin and you could feel better. Now with that, it's very dosage dependent, and this doesn't mean you have to go out and buy 8 different bottles of nutrients to make your serotonin. And the same concept goes back to GABA here. To make GABA, we need valerian root. We don't need it, but that's a great herb to help help make GABA. Passion flower extract, same thing. That's an herb. What also helps is L-taurine, lithium. These are it's an amino acid and then a mineral that's needed. Magnesium again, some B vitamins. If we take those nutrients in a single capsule, then we can potentially find the right dose. And again, this would be a bit of a band-aid, but if we can give some precursors to help make those neurotransmitters, then we can help take the edge off some of this stuff. Whether you're on medication for these issues or not, it's going to help complement the medications most of the time, as long as you are methylating well. That's a fun topic to go into, but keep in mind, if you don't respond well, it might be because you're not methylating. To methylate in the body means you're making things more water soluble and you're, quote, activating it in the body, getting it ready. So if your child, or if you do not respond well to taking some serotonin precursors or some GABA precursors or taking GABA in of itself, then methylation might be a problem. But going back to these two guys, if your symptoms are more, or your child's symptoms are with anxiety are more related to the more textbook anxiety-based problems, it's probably going to be GABA-driven. But then if we have almost all of those textbook symptoms of anxiety mixed in with some mood issues, we're probably talking more of a serotonin issue. Now, I am in the functional neurology world. I am big on brain hemisphericity. It's pretty fun because I learn from people who don't subscribe to it, and then I learn from people who have built their careers on it. I'm not here to debate all that fun stuff, but what I like to do is try to simplify things as much as we can, especially for patients. And the kicker with all of this is most of the time with anxiety, we see clinically that it is the person's left brain, particularly their left frontal lobe, which is not necessarily overactive, but it can be overactive. And that is operating correctly, again, if it's not overactive. But then it's the right side of the brain, particularly the right frontal lobe, that is not active or not as active as it should be. And this goes back to some of our shows about left brain, right brain, and how the brain functions. It's not that we say the right side of the brain does this and the left side of the brain does that. For instance, the left side of the brain physiologically and emotionally, and I guess if you want to divide out a couple more things, psychologically and cognitively, it is always the gas pedal. It is what makes us do things. It is the motivator. It is the one that goes and does things. It's really good at doing things over and over again. It's the right side of the brain that puts the brakes on things. So if we have a recurring fear, like we have, for instance, a child who will not sit in a room in the house by themselves at any point in time, and they're 10 years old because they have a fear that something is there. In this case, this is a fear, this is an irrational fear of someone coming to get them, not a thing, not anything made up in their head, but someone, a person, a robber, a bad guy, if you will, then with this individual, that is their left brain wound for sound, ready to fight, and that right brain is not coming in saying, hey, this is a little ridiculous. We're in this house. Let's say it's, 2,000 square feet. We got some doors locked. Windows are locked. Life is safe. We're in suburbia, Midwest, USA. Life is good. There should be no reason to be so worried about someone to come and get you. It's that right brain not coming in and saying, hey, let's do this and let's calm down. And meanwhile, the left brain's like, party on, Garth, let's do this again, and let's grab Wayne too, and let's just start having a good time, because all it wants to do is do the same thing over and over and over again. And if that's whether you are perseverating on a thought or an intrusive thought, or you have to check your door 18 times before you walk outside, or 3 times, or whatever your number is, or factor of three. It's usually a factor of three. The left brain wants to do it again and again, 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 again. And then it's that right brain that's not putting the brakes on. The cool thing is, especially when it comes to Dr. Davidson, who came up with the workings and the understandings of brain hemisphericity, what we know is that there's more of a lateralized effect of how GABA and serotonin are used on the right side of the brain. So these two neurotransmitters, it's not surprising that they're involved with anxiety, because if anxiety is something where this right brain is not quite engaged, and it's the right brain where we have more of a lateralized useful effect for our serotonin and GABA, then we kind of have this double whammy. We have neuronal networks and we have the chemicals needed that are not doing their jobs to put this in check for most individuals. And a lot of times anxieties revolve around daily activities. Daily activities for fear of the future mixed in with all of the stresses that our kids face, or as adults that we face. Now this does bring up the topic of, when it comes to brain hemisphericity in the clinical neuroscience world and functional neurology, is what happens? Can there be a, quote, weak left brain based anxiety? Answer is yes. And the first case that I saw in my 10 or 11 year career here, short career, but a very blessed 11 years. The first case I saw of a left brain-based anxiety was actually my son. So Kuiper is 7 years old, and he is left brain weak through and through. If you know of someone, you know of a kiddo who is pretty happy-go-lucky, has got a pretty good silly side, a little shy or very shy, or they've gone in and out of these stages. They don't have to have all of these, mind you. They also are very charismatic, and they can be a lot of fun to be around. They can also be jocks. These are usually jocks. A lot of professional athletes are very left brain weak. For instance, when I was working with some professional athletes at some point, and we're going over some diet things, I swear to you, I cannot tell you who it is, because it was a Kansas City Chief. No, they're no longer a Chief, but it kind of woke me up. So the left brain is all about understanding things, logic, facts, figures, and it's all about understanding academics. And I asked this gentleman, I go, what are you eating for protein? He handed me a list of vegetables. Didn't even know the difference between proteins and veggies. Those are things for the left brain to keep track of, the details, sort things out. He's all about, I got to get on the field. I got to do my job. I got to move my body. I got this to figure out. So these left brain weak people are more of the jocks, the happy-go-lucky again. These are people that are also more prone to depression. And I just want to point that out real quick, because if the left brain is not engaged and we don't have that gas pedal, man, we're not going to have motivation to do anything in life. But when it comes to a left brain based anxiety, a lot of the mechanisms are the same, except with it's the fact that the right brain is too wound up, just like Kuiper's. So the same mechanisms at play. And the kicker is they usually have pretty good utilization of serotonin and GABA because they're pretty chill, quote, and they can calm down when they do get wound up. And it can be a decent switch as well. Sorry, a whole nother topic. But same mechanisms, but the issue is they bring out some very serious irrational fears, and they bring out scenarios. So they bring out, for instance, Kuiper was anxious to go to a birthday party. Okay, shy, got it. Fear of unknown, got it. We're checking all the boxes. But then he had this fear, a scenario of, what happens if my new pants, which don't fit around my waist too well, fall down? You know, a left brain weak kid is not thinking about that. They don't really care about their clothes, but a right brain weak kid is not thinking about that. But a left brain weak kid does care usually about how they look and how they feel when they look, and they are very self-conscious. So that is the last thing that they want to have happen, is some sort of embarrassment. And then he went down the scenario. I go, okay, it's not going to happen because here's a belt. Okay, we're good to go. Let's go rock this party out, man. Well, now, Dad, no, it's what happens if this happens or this happens. And it is all just very irrational things. And it can almost get imaginative. And if it's not imaginative, it will be imaginative. So it's usually involving the imagination, but what they're very good at is coming up with scenarios that are going to inflict embarrassment or shame or guilt, because that is how they're wired. For the right brain weak person and the fear of the unknown, they are going to go over the scenarios. They want to know, for that same 7-year-old who is right brain weak and they have to go to that birthday party, they have to, because they probably don't want to, because the right brain weak kid doesn't really want to be social. They're not very good at being social. What's going to happen is they're going to come up with questions. How many people are going to be there? Parent might be like, well, 10 to 12. Well, what is it? 10 or 12? I got to know. Where's it at? Oh, it's over 25 minutes across town. Okay. Is that the same suburb? Is it next to the highway? Is it not next to the highway? Is it on, what latitude is it on? What longitude is it on? You would be surprised the questions that these kids come up with, because they're very smart, because the left brain is all about details and understanding things. And with that, what you'll not see is they're not going to be concerned about things that could inflict any sort of shame or guilt or embarrassment. And they're not really going to involve any imaginative aspects with it, because the right brain is where imagination lives. The right brain is where original thought comes from, where straight creativity, just pull it from the cloud, just download it, and there's the idea of a new business idea or a new art project or a new song to write or lyrics for the song, whatever the situation is. So with these anxieties, there's little more complexity, but something to consider is utilizing GABA precursors, serotonin precursors. And then if you go back to the other shows, try to understand what side of the brain is weak or dominant on yourself or your child. If you want to find out more at hmlfunctionalcare.com, there is a brain sheet, a left and right brain-based sheet PDF that goes over some of the basic functions of left brain, right brain, and then what happens if it's not engaged. Think of it like an orchestra. If one side's playing lower and slower than the rest of the orchestra, it's not going to sound good. We're going to have some issues. And anxiety, on that note, is no different. The kicker is, again, it is usually from something else. So what I want to end on is, the biggest thing with anxiety is it is being driven by something else. It is, there's something else causing it. Is it a left-right brain imbalance? Is it a GABA imbalance? Is it a serotonin imbalance, quote? Is it a something in the gut imbalance? Or is the anxiety being triggered by a by one of the core emotions? Is it being driven by depression? Because people who are depressed can eventually get anxious. And it sounds weird, but if the brain is depressed and we're not taking action and doing things, eventually stuff stacks up so much that you're going to get anxious because you can't even comprehend what you have to do to start getting things done around your life. And that might be the person who has a very cluttered house or a cluttered car or something along those lines. And at the same rate, maybe the anxiety is driven by a true fear or disgust. When it comes to three of our emotions that we deal with that can drive this, when it comes to, let's say, disgust, when you are taken back and you are thrown back on your heels by something that's occurred to you, that could be the driver of anxiety in the future. And the whole point of this is, if someone gets so debilitated, there's always something that can be done to be able to, quote, put the Band-Aid on, let everyone take a breather, and then find the health professional to help get down to the root cause. And going the route of, going the route of cognitive behavioral therapists, licensed therapists or counselors, if you will, figuring out from pediatrician or find your functional medicine practitioner or find your functional neurology practitioner for your child or yourself and try to get down to that cause, that is the key. And can everyone get help? I think so. Can it go away with everyone? No. If you've been dealing with anxieties for 20, 30 years or more or 10 years, that's a long time. That is a long time of your brain being wound up and wired that way. And I'm not saying it's not possible to unwind that, but that's a lot of work. That's a lot of lifestyle change. And at that point, what could be done is a lot of the edge could be taken off. So when it comes to anxieties, I hope that's a show that you got quite a bit out of. I feel like it could go into two or three or four subsets. If you have any feedback or input or things you would like to have gone into more, or if you're listening and you're a health professional of sorts that would like to chime in and have a conversation about it, reach out. HMLfunctionalcare.com. You can drop us a line there. And I like to keep it simple. You can find us there. Find us on the Facebook, Instagram, of course, or you can head on over and good old-fashioned email, find me directly, at hmlfunctionalcare.com. See you guys next time. When it comes to the brain left-right imbalance and being able to activate that, one of the best and easiest ways that we do that in HML, let's say we have my left brain weak Kuiper at home. Don't think for a second I didn't pocket my Shed Light Cold Laser, because I can bring it home and we're going to laser up his left frontal lobe. Now, what I like about the Shed Light Laser is that I can get very specific on where I point it, because you don't want to just aim it anywhere on the frontal lobe. So if I want to get that orbital frontal cortex or that dorsal lateral prefrontal cortex, that makes all the difference on whether you're going to be successful or not. And again, with these shed light lasers, this is huge because we can activate that brain. All the while, they might be talking about things that they can do in their life to help mitigate what is going on with their anxiety. Or we can do things therapeutically in office all at the same time. And that is why I love these shed light cold lasers. And this can be applied to both left and right sides of the brain. Easy peasy. Make sure you guys check out shedlightcoldlasers.com and talk to my guy, Dr. Griswold. He's going to be on the show soon.